And now, courtesy of the 11L Network, it's LF Midwood.
LF Midwood.
And the Midwood Files. With the LF Midwood Experience. Here on Radio New York International.
Sometimes I forget it's a show, and I start listening to that little riff there, to that solo, and I get a little lost. I get a little lost, if you know what I'm saying. Welcome to the Midwood Files, the longest hour of internet radio you will be hearing this week. It's November. Nope, not November. Don't panic. It's September 13. I guess 12, depending upon where you were. 13 other places. I know you don't really care about that. But that's what it is. I'm not going to say it wasn't at any point that I did not think that I would come out and do the program tonight. But I got to say, I've had some, those of you who frequent my Facebook. If you keep track of me and don't have me on sleep or whatever it is, you'll see that I wind up going out to eat. Once a week, once every other week, depending upon what the deal is with my aunt. Well, we had to go out, my aunt and I. We had to get some cat supplies, and we're going to go see my great uncle, which we did. And on the way back, we stopped at a restaurant, Warren, that's been there. It's Warren, Rhode Island, that's been there since 1977, that my family had frequented, but I had never had the opportunity to enjoy. So we went in there and we sat down in a nice, well-lit place. I notice lighting a lot now, you know, with the whole camera thing. I notice lighting a lot. I was actually noticing lighting a lot when I was pushing the video out of here, but now I'm back to noticing it again, I should say. So I ordered a burger. It was like a $15 burger, but it was a good burger. And it came with a side of fries, you know. And I think it was a half pound before cooking, so I don't know what that shakes out to by the time all these conversions for numbers and such. But it was a pretty big burger. And she said she wants to have dessert afterwards, so I'm like, I'm all right. You know, you're buying, I'm eating. So I got this, and you can see the picture of the burger up there on my Facebook wall. And there's also a picture of the piece of chocolate cake that I ate. Now, I don't know if the camera angle had fully grasped the size of this piece of chocolate cake. It was a big piece of chocolate cake. I mean, it was big. And I put it all down with a cup of coffee. And I was okay. I walked out. And now, you know, I'm like, I'm old. I'm feeling it. You know what I mean? I don't really do much anymore. I'm carrying around an extra 50 pounds. So I started to feel tired. You know, all those carbs, too. I started to feel tired. When I got home, she dropped me off and I came in the house and whatnot. I started to feel like I would say that I'm having digestive issues. That would be the best way to put it. I would say I eat something and then my digestive system really, it bothers me. It lets me know that it's not happy. You know, this is not to say that I felt nauseous or anything like that. No. Or maybe specifically any sort of heartburn, maybe a little bit. I am on Prilosec, by the way. But it let me know. And sitting here in front of the microphone, I feel very heavy. I just feel, you know, when you eat heavy and it's just like, oh my God. I'm going to have to eat light for a couple of days to kind of compensate because I can't go around feeling like this. I feel like a Led Zeppelin. Yeah, that's what I feel like. So we did that. I did that. Cat supplies. I'm in the process of switching my cats over from clay to the clumping stuff. Those of you who have cats will know what I mean. Those of you who don't, look it up. And they seem to be okay with it for the most part. Just actually, we were supposed to go to a we were invited to a barbecue on a cookout, I should say. I say barbecue, and the Southerners get offended. We're invited to a cookout, and it was gonna be out in Newport. And some friends of my uncle's, and they canceled at the last moment, which is like okay. So we decided we wanted to go see my uncle anyway. So it's kind of nice. The weather's been nice. I know it's been raining a lot earlier in the week, but it was really good today. I was actually glad to get out. You know, when I leave the house now, I take my camera with me. And at the moment, I'm carrying in a very small Case Logic case. It's a Case Logic is the name of the company that they make all sorts of cases, and they've been doing it for a long time. It's a DSL, what they call a hammock case, but it's very small. So what I put the camera face down into the case, and there's like a suspension hammock, and you could put up to like, I never really pushed it too far, but I'm pretty sure I could get maybe a 255 millimeter lens. Definitely a 200 into the hammock and then close it. And then there's memory foam on the top, but the case is very small. And the way I have it set up is I have the strap on the camera because, well, I'm a newbie and I keep my strap on my camera because that's what you're supposed to do. And it makes it difficult to get the camera in and out of the case. I mean, it's just a pain in the neck. It's not like something that's like difficult. It's just a pain in the neck would be the best way to put it. But I take it with me when I leave the house religiously. I have two batteries, you know? And it's starting to, and I mentioned this to the producer, it's starting to bug me a little bit that I haven't really taken any pictures of anything. But I haven't really seen anything. I think I saw one thing like last Monday on Labor Day itself that was actually worth shooting and that I just didn't because it was a pain in the neck to get the camera out of the case. So I'm kind of a little disappointed in myself. I think what's going to wind up happening, and I know it's not a matter of think, I already have another camera bag on the way that's going to kind of split the difference between the ginormous one with all the stuff in it and what I'll actually wind up carrying every time I leave the house. But if you're going to make the commitment to photography, you bring the camera with you pretty much wherever you go. And I lead that kind of life. I can do that for the most part. I mean, I'm not walking around the ghetto with my camera, but I ain't walking around the ghetto anyway. So it doesn't really matter as far as that goes. But if I leave the house and I'm going to be dealing with civilized individuals, yes, I take my camera with me. And I'm digging the camera for the most part. You know, I've played with it a lot. I've gotten some other lenses. I got a 55, or I should say a 50 millimeter prime lens, which is one that's not a zoom. It's just 50 millimeters, which is actually 80 something, I guess, because you have to do the 35 millimeter equivalent. And it's nice. I like it. Yeah, I like it. I have a 24 on the way, which is actually going to be 38. I don't know whether you've noticed this or not, but whenever I mention a number and then I mention it, the actual number that the lens is because everything's broken into a 35 millimeter equivalent. So ASP sensor cameras, these are crop sensor cameras. There's a 1.5, or with Canon, which I have, is 1.6. So a 50 millimeter is one, and then it's 0.6 more in order to figure out what the equivalent is on 35 millimeter. And I know it sounds confusing, but it's really not once you just start to, you know, relate to things in those terms. But yeah, the prime, I wanted to make the point, the prime lenses are generally sharper. They have they are a lot sharper than the zooms. The zooms give up some sort of sharpness or factor in order to be zoomed. So it's convenience versus, you know, having just a single lens where you have to move yourself rather than the lens. But I'm having a good time. I hooked it up I hooked it up as a webcam, and it's awesome. I think I might have mentioned this last week. It's the best friggin' webcam I have ever used. Holy smokes. There's no going back. So, as a matter of fact, today in the mail, I got a power supply for it. I can pop in my peas bag tonight. I'm off to the races. I got a power supply for it that'll allow me to plug the camera into the wall so I don't have to worry about battery power running out. And that's going to make it really useful to be able to use for videos, you know, in regards to like things like OBS and streaming and whatnot. So I will eventually, when I get things sorted out, I will do a little bit of streaming. Don't know exactly what I'll be streaming. I don't know whether it'll be the main show or it'll be some sort of auxiliary segment. I'm thinking about doing that. Again, you notice tonight, no music. I couldn't get out of bed. I was sitting there in bed. I could not move. It was chocolate cake. It was the chocolate cake's fault. It really was. And I'm trying to think of anything else that's really phenomenal this week. You know, in my personal life, not so much. I spoke to the boogeyman. The boogeyman was having some sort of issue with something. And I spoke to JL like last Friday or something, and he was like, it was explaining what it is, and I said I'd probably be better off speaking directly to Dave. So I said just have Dave, call me or get in contact with me, make an appointment, and we'll figure out what's going on. Because I do a lot of the PC troubleshooting for, whoever calls me, quite frankly. And so I was all set to help him out on, I think it was Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday, I think. And he called me right around when he said he was. And he says, look, I just solved the problem. I solved it like 15 minutes before I called you, 15 minutes before now. And I was, hey, anybody who comes to me with a problem and then all of a sudden says they don't have a problem is like really, really kind of cool. So he's telling, because we don't talk very often, Dave and I. So he's telling me he listens to the show every now and then. And he goes, when it's good, it's good. And when it's not, not so much. And I've been trying to figure out with, what an orange man bad liberal would possibly think is good about my show. what could it be? Probably when I delve into the personal stuff. When I get into my little asides and talk about my week or talk about my sordid past. I think that might be what he's talking about. I'm not 100%. I didn't ask for clarification. Like I said, it was a non-hostile phone call. you got to have these non-hostile calls with other staff members. Otherwise, the boss gets mad. I knew JL would get in touch with me eventually, particularly when he needed something. But I knew he would get in touch with me. So yeah, that was interesting. I can't make everybody happy. I guess I got to be me and all that. As they say, I don't really even think about my audience too much. It's like whatever. I'm sitting here. I get my ass into the chair, right? If I get my ass into the chair, then you can sit here for the longest hour of internet radio. However you may imbibe. Again, I thank you. However you may imbibe. It's too early for the plugs. I'm not going to do that. I do have some news. Actually, I guess I can chit-chat a little bit about the news before I actually start reading a few of these stories that I put together. You know how it works. I usually throw some stuff together. What I like to be as current as possible, so some of it's literally an hour or so ago, as far as I'm concerned. And I listen to a little more news than I normally do during the day. I got to say, I was watching Jesse Waters' show on Fox earlier, and I'm not the biggest Jesse Waters fan. I like his hair. I really dig his hair. But I'm not the biggest Jesse Waters fan in general. I think he's okay. He's like some of those Fox people. They're okay. They don't excite me. He's no Tucker Carlson, Or he's no Greg Gutfeld. But Jesse happened to have on, what's his name? Not Roger Stone, Oliver Stone, who is obviously, you may be familiar with Oliver Stone as being a film director, which he is. He's a film director. I guess he still makes movies. But he's made a lot of controversial movies over the years, And he's got a new memoir out called Chasing the Light, which I think is brilliant for a director because that's always what they're doing, especially on the outside, is chasing the light. We got good lighting. We need to go with this. And he was asked about the idea. I guess he was on, what's his name, show? I guess Stone was on, who's the Jew on friggin', yeah, that narrows it down, right? Who's the Jew on HBO? I don't even want to speak his name. That's right. I don't speak his name anymore because it really makes me angry. But that guy, the Jew on HBO who does the show, he's got a talk show. He was on with him, and he was pretty much indicating that, it's like the idea becomes is if you believe the Russian collusion stuff based upon what the intelligence agencies are telling you, you're out of your mind. The CIA, the FBI, all those letters... All those letter agencies. Now, he's had to stick up his ass about the government for the longest time. Goes back to Salvador in 80. I think was that like, when was Salvador? Like, God, 78, 80, something like that. Sometime in that range. Great movie, by the way. A Platoon was obviously not exactly what you would call pro government, particularly the idea of military intelligence. So I guess military intelligence would fall under the category of intelligence agencies. Normally we think of just the regular civilian letter agencies, but no, intel would fall under that. And he was telling the guy that I won't mention his name that if you believe what the intelligence agencies are telling you about Russia, you're pretty naive. And I agree with him. And, you know, and I don't agree with Oliver Stone very much. I started to depart ways. Who popped another one? I'm just going to keep count tonight. I think that's like six. I parted ways with Oliver Stone right around JFK, when JFK came out. Now, JFK is a monumental movie in its making, 100%. However, it should have been called the Jim Garrison story rather than JFK, because it obviously focused on Jim Garrison, who was still the only person to bring a prosecution in the Kennedy assassination, I believe, some sort of prosecution in the Kennedy assassination. If you've never seen JFK, you should. But I had a real problem with JFK because I was concerned about the idea, and this is when I was a lefty. I had a fear of the idea of revisionist history, whereas there would be a generation that would eventually come along that was just literally too lazy to read a book, and they would strictly be relying upon, I saw it on the internet or in a movie, even worse, in a movie, I saw it in a movie. So I was a little concerned about that, and he kind of presented it as gospel. Now, again, it was a well-made film for what it was, and I still kind of have, you know, and then he started to get a little bit more to the left, and he kind of drifted more to the left, and then he just got strange. He was doing, like, he was like Howard Zinn for a little while. You know, there was a couple, like a decade there, maybe or so, or maybe two, where he thought he was Howard Zinn, you know, in the People's History of America and whatnot. I tried to watch a thing. He did a multi-series thing for, I think it was Showtime or one of the cable networks, and it was very anti-American. That's really the only the best way I could put it. But when I think of it, it was more anti. I'm trying to be fair. I know I couldn't make it through. I know the producer and I watched like one of them, one and a half of them, and then I just said, no, I'm not doing this anymore. So that should tell you what I thought of it. You know, the actual feelings that it invoked were more along the lines of something like, again, Howard Zinn's History of America. I got to go back to that. I guess I already said it, whereas it was written strictly from a lefty standpoint. You know, like it's almost as if it were made by a fellow traveler, if you will. Now, I mean, I can understand certain elements of our society being upset that it's always spoken of as the Americans winning World War One and the Americans winning World War Two. You know, and I understand the importance of giving the Soviets some credit in that little scenario there, and certainly the English who held out for so long, particularly with World War Two. You know, I mean, other than London, at least they were really screwed, and all Russia had to give because we had the manufacturing. We obviously had geared up our manufacturing to war production. We, you know, I forget what that thing was, but it went into effect, and a lot of the civilian manufacturers wound up doing wartime stuff. So we were able to crank it up and really produce materials. So we had, ordnance and trucks and tanks and stuff like that. And the Russians, what the Russians contributed towards finally defeating the Germans, and this is not to be underestimated, the Russians, they provided manpower. More Russians were killed over the course of World War II than any other. As far as a country goes, Russia had more fatalities. Literally, the term cannon fodder comes to mind. So Russia gave what it always had to give, which was manpower. And World War II would not have turned out the way it did. The Allies, that's the term I would like to use, the Allies would not have won the war had it not been for Russia's tremendous contribution, for sure. It's interesting, and I think there was a couple of instances where they had moved whole factories. They had moved whole lines of factories, like X amount of miles in line, you know, back towards them, and like changing where the line was, which was actually kind of tremendous as well, too, considering, again, the amount of manpower that would take. But, yeah, you got to give Russia credit for that. Yeah, you got it. And not for nothing, Patton was right. We should have gone right the fuck over the Rhine when we had the chance, you know? but anyway, we're on the other side. So. But I thought it was interesting. So, yeah, you know, the world's wacky. It's a wacky world. And, you know, just when I thought I would never, ever really have anything in common with Oliver Stone as far as thought processes went, there you go. there you go. It's really strange. You know, it's interesting. Speaking of being a wacky world, you know, Friday was the anniversary, 19th anniversary of September 11th. Again, I don't know where most of you were, but I was across the river there, smelling it as it happened. I've explained that more than a few times. You could literally smell it. It's interesting how 19 years ago we were lauding and applauding police officers who ran into those buildings, just you know, side by side with those firemen, to see if they could save anyone, if they could help anyone, to put their own lives at risk. And now police is demonized. You know, police departments across the country are demonized. I think it's something like in X number of months, like since April, I think it's been like something like 20 police chiefs actually resigning over various issues, mostly the fact that they're not getting the support from their, here it goes again, that's seven, city councils. And not for nothing, the funny part about it is and it's, and I don't mean funny because it's very sad, is more than a few of those chiefs who have required were people of color. These were people of color. You understand what I'm saying? Oh, Black Lives Matter. You want someone who's going to be sympathetic to your cause and is black themselves. But yeah, let's get them fired. Yeah, let's burn down the cities so they'll get fired or they want to leave, because they did resign. Several of them did resign based upon the fact that they weren't being backed up, and their city councils had lied to them. Seattle comes to mind. I think most prevalently in my mind for that. But again, you know, more than a couple few. You know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell the states apart anymore because apparently they're all on fire. And what's interesting about these fires is they're apparently, and I might have a story or two on it, they're apparently starting to see that some of these fires were purposefully set. I don't know if there have been any direct Antifa connections drawn. Oh, I'm still burping. I'm telling you, man. Woo! What a burger that was. And the cake. The cake was great. It was decadent. I don't use that term. The waitress, she brought the cake to the table, and I said, "That's spectacular." I don't say that very often. I'm not the kind of guy who says spectacular. You know, I'll watch a musical every now and then, maybe Spartacus or something, but I won't say spectacular. That thing was spectacular. Holy smokes. Anyway, getting back to smoke, I think all four states are on fire. I think all four of the trouble states are on fire. And Gavin Newsom is trying to blame it on global warming, which I find amusing. State of California is burning. It's global warming. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with your forestry problems, but it does look like, and again, there have been a couple arrests throughout those four states for people starting fires. I think 27 people have died. And I'm not quite sure what the amount of damage is done, but obviously it would be in the astronomical category. It would be spectacular. No, that's the wrong usage of the word. But yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of damage. And it's just, you can see it from space. You can see the smoke from space. Imagine that. Wow. You can see the Great Wall from space, the Great Wall of China. But you can't see, normally you can't see stuff like that. But when there's enough, that's how much smoke. I think they said something, there's like, as of an hour ago, there were like 90 separate large, what they refer to as large blazes in those four states, which is absolutely positively crazy. So, you know, our prayers and thoughts go out to those places. You know, people lose their homes, their businesses. Again, very much like the riots themselves. You know, you look at that, and it's just, to us, it's just like a statistic. We look at it, and it's like, oh, look at that. And it's going this many miles, and it's here. That's people's lives, you know. And having been an individual who has had lost stuff, I've lost my stuff a couple of times. I lost my stuff, as George Carlin would say, who I've come to think of as another idiot, by the way. But I lost my stuff. I was separated from my things. Yeah. And I had to start over again with less stuff until I had the opportunity to accumulate more stuff. I have to have a drink. I'm drinking iced tea. I'm drinking the diet iced tea. I couldn't even do coffee. I was like, no, not. Coming out, I'm doing my thing. I'm going to drink a little iced tea, and I'm going to go lie down again. That's basically, this is just an intermission in my slothiness. Sloth. That's my favorite. Sloth. That's my favorite. Deadly Sin, Seven Deadly Sins. Sloth. Yeah, Midwood votes for sloth. I got sloth. Okay. Let's see what I got. Because I do have some news. I know some of it pertains to the fires, and some of it pertains to other stuff, and some of it just pertains. I don't want to make any noise with this. Man, this I got to get a lighter tablet. Killing me. I have a stand for it, but it wouldn't. It's not what I call likable. Okay, first off, I wanted to mention just before I forget. Yeah, let it open up. I can do a little open. Nope, I lost it. Emma Peel died. That's Emma Peel from the Avengers died. Very sad. What's her real name? I'm horrible. All I remember is the leather. It's what's her name? From Masterpiece Theater and the Avengers, and she was in, I can't remember the woman's real name. Oh, wow. She was in Game of Thrones. She was excellent in Game of Thrones, by the way. I think she died a couple days ago. So that's not good. That's sad. I think it was 80-something. And in English years, that's a long time. So I can't believe, see, I opened stuff, and it's supposed to open to a particular place. But it doesn't. It opens up somewhere else. Somewhere in another galaxy far, far away. And I have no idea what to make of it. That being said, if I say Evan Peel, you know who I mean when I go Evan Peel. All right, so let me get rid of that. AP is particularly bad for that. What I got next? You think I would label them or something, but I don't really care enough. Oh, this was introduced. This has actually been trending on Twitter. This is that Act Blue. And this is from Fox. Exclusive data shows that half of 2019 donations to Act Blue came from untraceable, unemployed donors. And there's a little, I'll give you a little read on this, so you might not know. There's a burp coming. Oh, my God. Yeah, all this high-tech equipment, and all I can do is burp into it. Anyway, let me see if I can even read this. Less than 2 months ahead of the presidential election, with concerns of foreign interference again at the forefront, a conservative political group is raising some serious concerns about millions of donations reported by a major Democratic fundraising platform. A preliminary computer analysis of the Take Back Action Fund, obtained exclusively by Fox, has found that nearly half of all the 2019 donations to Act Blue were made by people claiming to be unemployed. Action fundraiser president John questioned the veracity of those donations and called it hoopla that must be closed for the sake of election integrity. After downloading hundreds of millions of dollars in donations to the Take Back Action Fund servers, we were shocked to see that almost half the donations to Act Blue in 2019 claimed unemployment and unemployed individuals. The name of employers must be disclosed when making political donations, but more than 4.7 million donations came from people who claimed they did not have an employer. Those 4.7 million donations totaled $346 million Act Blue raised and sent to liberal causes. The trend is continuing this year as an action fund examination of the 2020 data from January through August showed an uptick in unemployed donations through Act Blue, up to 50% this year. Yeah, that's a little suspicious. Now, even for me, and I'm like, you know, man, that's a little suspicious. Act Blue defends the integrity of its donations. It said many came from retirees and people who aren't counted as employed, such as homemakers. According to the findings of the Action Fund, a nonprofit that aims to educate the public on conservative solutions for political reform, 48.4% of Act Blue donations last year, prior to the massive loss of jobs that came with the onslaught of the coronavirus pandemic, came from those who did not list an employer or who claimed to be unemployed. It's hard to believe that in a time when the U.S. economy, U.S. unemployment rate was less than 4%, this is, remember, again, before April, that unemployed people had $346 million to send to Act Blue for liberal causes. See, Act Blue is like it's like a clearinghouse for liberal causes in general. So, you know, you send your money, or I'm not asking you to do this, nor would I do it myself, but people send money to Act Blue, and then Act Blue distributes it to various political causes. Just to clear that up. It was created in 2004, bills itself as a powerful online fundraising platform available to Democratic candidates, committees, progressive organizations, and nonprofits that share our values for no cost besides a 3.9 processing fee on donations. That's what they charge various people to use it. The main concern here, I'm not going to read the whole article because I know what the main concern here. The main concern here is that a certain amount of that $346 million might have come from foreign. And that's not good. We don't want that. Why can't I get this to go? So it's very questionable. It seems that they may be sidestepping, you know, the law, the financial laws that are involved with all this. So I guess we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if it pops up anymore. It probably will as we get closer to friggin' election day. You know, not for nothing. Unless I'm drinking my own bathwater, which I have been known to do. I believe the current president of the United States, towards the end of his first term in office, has been nominated for 2 Nobel Prizes. Yes, 2, not 1, but 2. 2 separate occasions. I believe once for the Jew deal there with Israel and EUA, or UAE, you know what I mean. Yeah, United Arab Immigrant thing over there. And I love when I'm concise like that. And in Kosovo, so they think that the deal he got broken in Kosovo, and I just, he did another one in Bahrain there with Bahrain, you know, because there's going to be a lot of those Arab nations falling in line. Now get this, you know, again, you remember when Obama was... He was nominated his first 11 days in office. He had done nothing. And then for the preceding 8 years on a foreign policy level, had basically disenfranchised the United States from most of its overseas allies. Not a really good idea. And, you know, had sterling relations with Israel and North Korea. Yeah, what's not even, if we count North Korea in the president's accomplishments, and you say, well, what deal was there worked out there? You know what was worked out in North Korea? This is very important. Before President Trump came into office, there was talk of war with North Korea. There's a war, 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 war. And it was like somebody's going to blank and something's going to go wrong. And the president came in, and when I say the president, I mean President Trump came in. And he set up these talks with whoever's running the show over there. And they broke that tension. There was no longer that impending... You know, somebody's gonna blink. I'm afraid of my own shadow, kind of thing. It wasn't great communication, but there was some form of communication, and I think that that's admirable. And I certainly think it's more than Obama had managed to accomplish in the 8 years. Obama and Joe Biden had managed to accomplish in the 8 years that they had a shot at it. And you could arguably say that Biden's been in the government, you know, in the swamp, the Washington swamp. For what, 40 years longer? Enriching his family and friends along the way? Let's see. This is actually pretty good, too. Pretty good news. Warring Afghans, again, this is something that you can kind of give a little bit of credit to the U.S. for. Warring Afghans meet to find peace after decades of war. Afghans' warring sides started negotiating for the first time, bringing together the Taliban and delegates appointed by the Afghan government Saturday for historic meetings amid at ending decades of war that has killed tens of thousands of combatants and civilians. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo attended the opening ceremony in Qatar, where the meetings are taking place and where the Taliban maintain a political office. The United States is a proponent of sovereign, unified representation. The United States is a proponent of a sovereign, unified, representative Afghanistan that is at peace with itself and its neighbors. But you were right on the next. But you will write the next chapter in Afghani history, Pompeo said during the opening ceremony. Afghans will choose their political system, Pompeo said, and shared that United States found that democracy, which systems reflect the choices of the majority while protecting the human rights of everyone, works best and brought the United States great peace and prosperity. However, no one-size-fits-all solution to these matters. I guess you could ask Iraq about that. The United States doesn't seek to impose its system on others, Pompeo added. Pompeo urged the Afghan parties in the negotiations to make decisions that move away from the violence and the corruption towards peace and development and prosperity. Yeah, at some point in time, we're going to have to stop paying these people to kill us, you know, or stop paying them. I want to make sure you understand what I'm saying. Stop paying them. Like, we were building, going in there and getting them all sorts of red hair dye and building all sorts of water supplies and schoolhouses and all sorts of stuff, you know, making these, giving the enriching the fiefdoms of the chiefdoms. Of the chiefums, chieftains, that's the word. So, same thing in Iraq for the longest time. We were kind of paying them not to kill us, you know. So that's why I look at something, you know, as much as I totally, obviously have issues with Israel, if there's peace in the Mideast, it's probably better for everybody involved, I would say. Because that's always been everyone's, when I think it was listed amongst the complaints and or demands that Osama bin Laden himself had issued was the subsidy of Israel and Israel's presence and United States presence and their backing of Israel. So if you can get more of these Arab nations on board, I guess it's better for everyone. I just want to see war. I want to see the end of wars, I should say. I'm tired of wars. You know, I talk to the Connecticut Bureau there on a regular basis, and it's the wars. We need to stop the wars. There's too many wars. You know, it's true. It's 100%. War is profitable, of course. That's why it's always around, and has been for the longest time. But you know, I agree. So if the president can help foster these things, and the United States can kind of help foster peace amongst the Sephardic, no, that's what are they, the Semitics. Then yay. You know what I mean? Yay. I'm still anti-Semitic. I hate them all. But I hate you, too. So, I mean, that's just... I hate everyone. Everyone. I do. Let's see. There are no spoilers to the peace process. Karzai. He's still in office. I would have thought he would have had a heroin overdose by now. Jesus Christ. The Afghan sides are also expected to discuss constitutional changes and power sharing during the talks in Qatar's capital of Doha. So that's good news. And again, you know, if the United States, that's another feather in President Trump's cap. You know, not trying to convince you who to vote for. If you're listening to this show, I know who you're voting for. And I still don't know what's going on. I look around, speaking of voting. First of all, I'm in a blue state. Rhode Island has 2 electoral votes, and they always go blue. Always. I don't even... They went for Reagan back in 80. This is true. But since then, they don't really. You know, they'll be like, occasionally there'll be like a Republican governor or something. But for the most part, the legislate, the local stuff and all that has always been blue. So no matter how I vote and how the producer votes, it's going to be blue here. So it's almost like a wasted in a sense, because it doesn't really matter. But I like the vote. I like going through the process because of the people who have sacrificed and the sacrifices they have made, you know, for me to be able to do so. But there seems to be a little bit of confusion this year. I think they're going to be sending, I think what it is, and this is what I heard, they're going to send applications for mail-in ballots out soon. Which means if you wish to do a mail-in ballot, you fill out this application and you check the affirmative, and then you mail that back to them, and then they mail you a ballot, and then you mail the ballot back out, which sounds rife for the idea of there being, but they don't have to. I'm not worried about Rhode Island and corruption. There it's going to go. That's the way it's going to go, because I ride around and I see the goddamn bumper stickers. But seriously, so I think I want to vote in person. It's supposedly be up at this big, huge Indian. Well, it's like almost like a little Indian reservation. The Indians own the property. See, they didn't get much because the Indians, really, for the most part, they got along with the Rhode Islanders and Roger Smith and all that. Roger Smith? Did I say that right? Roger Williams. Robert Smith is the cure. So, yeah. So, I really want to go in person, but I don't know if anybody's going to want to go with me. I have to talk to the producer and see what she wants to do, and we'll figure out what we want to do when we get these applications. I mean, I would really just like, I like the process, you know what I mean? It means something to me, especially having been disenfranchised for a bit. Spent a little time not being able to vote, and it sucked. So I'll keep you posted on how that all works out. What do I got here? I got stuff. Oh, yeah, this was the arson thing. This is from the Conservative Treehouse. Ooh, excuse me. Arson arrest being made across the West Coast. Multiple fires identified as arson. 27 people killed. Dozens missing. In a rather disconcerting sequence of events, many of the West Coast forest fires are now being attributed to intentional arson. One of the key aspects to the unnatural outbreak of the fires is the proximity to homes and well-established neighborhoods in California. California, Washington State, and Oregon. Yeah, usually these things are in the middle of nowhere, and then it takes them time to get near populated areas. So a lot of these are now popping up in populated areas, which is basically what that article just said. A Twitter account by Katie Davenport has been tracking some of the fires and a recent series of events from the areas. The ongoing thread is updated with several points of evidence where people have been caught, captured, or filmed in the act of lighting fires. Well, there is some speculation and some evidence that these fires may have been ignited by Antifa activists as a method of further creating chaos in the region. The FBI is saying there is no evidence Antifa or Joe Biden's far-left base of support are behind the fires. However, given the internal dynamic within the FBI and the FBI accepting FBI carries a political agenda, and considering that's what Stone was talking about, considering the facts on the ground do not support the denials, and the downplaying of motive by the FBI is not very reassuring. Yeah. A statement by federal law enforcement to law enforcement today is troubling and points to several ongoing investigations into these fires. Well, that's scary. I mean, it wouldn't, you know, here we go, let's see. In Oregon's Chickamauga and Marion counties, south of Portland, smoke was so thick that it was difficult to see more than 10 feet ahead of you on Saturday morning. Well, that's crazy. So, like I said, I guess they're going to have to do a little bit more investigating. But, the idea of the FBI not wanting to outright say it was Antifa, maybe they don't have enough evidence. Maybe, again, they're part of that machine, unfortunately. They're part of the Joe Biden extortion machine. They would much rather see Joe Biden in office than they would President Trump. You know, those I can't say deep state anymore. There's no such thing as deep state. All right. Well, if there's no such thing as deep state, right? There's no such thing as Antifa. Antifa doesn't exist. It's a myth. And there's no such thing as a deep state. That's a myth, too. Then what the fuck is going on? What is happening? Let me see. Yeah, speaking of deep state and myths, this is lost it. Oh, that sucks. Hang on. Give me a second here. Where is it? I'm gonna have to check for this again. This was a big story, so it should be in the main menu. I'm just going to put in, give me a sec. Phones. I give you a little hint there. Yeah. Okay. Wait, I can pick, there's several of these. Political, I'll do the New York Post. I'm partial to New York Post. Members of Mueller's team, Mueller, I haven't listened to Dr. Savage in quite a while. I got to get back into doing that. Members of Mueller's team wiped phones during Trump probe, says the Department of Justice. More than 24 cell phones belonging to members of the special counsel Robert Mueller's team were wiped clean of their data before the Justice Department Inspector General could check them, according to a report. Newly released DOJ documents show the phones were wiped of data because of forgotten passwords, irreparable screen damage, loss of the device, and intentional deletion, among other reasons. Mueller's deputy, Andrew Weissman, accidentally wiped his device twice after he entered the wrong passcode too many times in March 2018, according to documents cited by Fox. Attorney General James Quartus' phone wiped itself of the data without his input, say the records, which released from the lawsuit, which released after a lawsuit from the conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch, the network reported. So, yeah, Judicial Watch wanted the phone information released. And what do you know? Poof, no phones. The documents also show that a phone belonging to then-FBI attorney Lisa Page, who exchanged anti-Trump texts with fellow agent Peter Storch, was restored to factory settings when the Inspector General's office got it, according to Fox News. Mueller's phone found no evidence of criminal conspiracy. Okay, what's it? Mueller's probe. I'm going to do this one real slow. Mueller's probe found no evidence of criminal conspiracy or collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials, although it did claim that the Kremlin interfered in the 2016 presidential election in sweeping and systematic fashion. Okay. You know, I short of actually marching someone into the voting booth at gunpoint and saying, you're either going to vote for this person or we're going to shoot you in the head. I mean, how can you, you know, what? I still don't fully understand the idea of how a foreign country could, I mean, unless they actually hacked into the system, that's like a whole other ball of wax if that were possible. And the FBI said that wasn't possible. I think at one point in time, the FBI, for as credible as they are, was asked if the Russians actually, you know, had, is it possible that the Russians could have changed any direct effect on the way people voted, you know, on like people actually voting. And I believe he said no, you know, at the end of the day. So you can make all the ads you want. Who watches political ads? I never watch political ads. You watch political ads? The only way I see political ads is if there's something like really, you know, really, really good or really bad that one of the news programs is showing, and I happen to be catching it there. I don't watch political ads. Why would I do that? Doesn't make any sense. I consider myself to be reasonably well informed. I don't need political ads. I'm not, and I know how I'm voting. See, it's always that people in the middle. We've talked about this before. Where I know how I'm voting. You know, like I know how I'm voting, and JL knows how he's voting. You know? And then there's a lot of people between us who may not know how they're voting. You know, there's that middle group there. So just as an example. So I just, like I said, I wish someone could explain to me how Russia or any other nation for that matter managed to have a vote, change the way that someone actually voted. I would like someone to explain that to me. I guess I'm an idiot. No, I think about it. The more I think about it, it's like, you know, there's ads, and I consider people like stupid. But if people are stupid, then not for nothing, I would think, you know, political ads in general are aimed towards the misinformed or the uninformed. Basically, anybody who's going to see an ad and go, "Hey, look at that! I'm not voting for that guy. Look what he did. Look what the other guy said that he did." And the person has to approve the message at the end. I always dig that, so the fingerprints are always on it, you know? It's like, yeah, I saw an ad. Now I'm not voting for that guy. Nah. I don't know anybody who ever did that. I don't know. Well, I don't know a lot of people. I no longer know a lot of people. I used to. So anyway, let's see what else I got. So, yeah, that's interesting. Cell phones disappearing, you know, or and the fun stuff continues. This was interesting this week, too. This was a pretty big CNN, and this is actually a Fox story. CNN head Zucker offered Trump debate advice. Floated weekly show. Leaked 2016 Cohen calls reveal. So in 2016, Michael Cohen had a phone call with the head of CNN. CNN President Jeff Zucker oversees a network that has nothing but has been nothing but hostile for President Trump. But newly revealed audio of a March 10th, and you could put this into Facebook. Not, well, you're probably not on Facebook. You put it into YouTube, and it should pop right up, and you'll actually hear it for yourself. But in the March 10th, 2016 conversation with then-Trump attorney Michael Cohen shows Zucker attempting to cozy up to the then-Republican frontrunner. In a recording obtained by Tucker Carlson Tonight, I love Tucker, Zucker boasted an importance the importance of his network, telling Cohen, "You cannot be elected president of the United States without CNN. You guys had great instincts, great guts, and great understanding of everything," Zucker told Cohen, "but you're missing the boat on how it works going forward." Later in the conversation, Zucker expressed hesitation about contacting Cohen by email while referring to Trump fondly as the boss. "I'm very conscious that I'm not putting this too much in email. As a lawyer, I'm sure you understand," Zucker is heard telling Cohen. "And, you know, as fond as I am of the boss, he also has a tendency to know, you know, like if I call him or email him, then he is capable of going out to his next rally and saying, 'We just talked,' and I can't have that, if you know what I'm saying." Yeah. See, that's the thing. You know what it is? There's a word that somebody, I forget who it was that I heard say it today, but Donald Trump is very authentic. You know what I'm saying? There's no pretense there. There's no, he's just very authentic. And that's why he would go and say something. "I just talked to this guy last week. I've got to be careful. I just don't want him talking about it on the campaign trail. But you know what? I'm going to give him a call right now. I'm going to wish him luck in the debate tonight." Zucker's referring to that night's GOP primary debate, which CNN was hosting. "I have all these proposals for him," Zucker told Cohen. "I want to do a weekly show with him and all this stuff." Zucker then went on to compliment Trump's debate performance, telling Cohen, "I think the other guys are going to gang up on him tremendously, and I think he's going to hold his own as he does every time. He's never lost a debate, and you know what? He's good at this. He's going to do great." He also offered Cohen some debate advice for Trump, specifically on how his rivals may attack the celebrity real estate mogul as a con man. "You know what you should do? Whoever's around him today should just be calling him a con man all day long, so that it's he hears it from Marco Rubio and it doesn't matter." That's funny. Zucker said, "Hey, con man, hey, con man, hey, con man." He thinks it's his name now, you know. That's the transcript of the phone call. CNN did not immediately respond to Fox's news request for a comment. Last week's Tucker Carlson Tonight unveiled a recording of the conversation between Cohen and CNN anchor Chris Cuomo, who was heard denying apparent sexual misconduct allegations. "Do you know how many effing phone calls I've got from people at ABC who say that reporters are calling and lying about things that they heard about me to try and get stories about me because I was on ABC?" Cuomo asked Cohen. "Guys calling and saying, 'Hey, I heard Charlie Rose of ABC used to invite women to his hotel and open up his bathrobe. Do I look like that kind of effing guy?'" "Sure, why not?" Cohen replied with a chuckle. After Cuomo's audio was made public, Cohen tweeted that the only people in possession of the audio recordings were the Department of Justice and Donald Trump himself. "I did not give this recording or authorize for its use for Fox News or anyone," he said. "At POTUS and cronies violated my First Amendment rights and now all this to discredit me and my book. What's next?" So anyway, that's awesome. That's awesome. And they were actually, you know, if you think about it, you know, CNN at that point in time was, they were double dipping. They wanted Trump to win the primaries, and then they wanted their opponent, they wanted their person to win. So, you know, they were like two things at the same time, which was really kind of interesting. Let's see what else I got. What time is it? I don't even lost track of the time. Do 53. I can do one more. Let's see. What do I got? I got the Nobel Prize thing. Let's see. This is also out of the post. Nope, it's not there. I don't know why that happens a lot now. And I'm a pretty technical guy. And sometimes stuff happens and I don't know why. Let me get rid of this. Maybe that would help. Okay. Yeah, I'll go with this one because this ties into what I was talking earlier about the police. How Governor Greg Abbott made Austin's police budget cuts a top campaign issue for candidates running in November. And this is out of the Texas Tribune. The Republican governor isn't on the November ballot, but he has come out hard against efforts to shift city money away from policing, echoing a national debate on policing and crime during a tumultuous election season. Heading into the November election, Greg Abbott has made clear that he believes policing should be at the top mind of all his Texas candidates and voters. The Republican state leader, who isn't on the ballot this cycle, has repeatedly condemned recent efforts to cut police budgets and shift money towards other social services that activists and local Texas officials say could stem systemic racism and crime. He has reacted by proposing drastic legislation to counter any cuts and even asking all those seeking office this year to pledge against any effort to defund the police. It's a move that echoes an interestingly polarizing national political debate in which both Republicans and Democrats often stick to their party lines, that pit of fear rising crime in major cities against that for racial justice and reforms in police behavior. It is particularly offensive that some cities are disrespecting and even defunding our law enforcement agencies and communities across the state, Abbott said at a news conference held Thursday at the Austin Police Association's headquarters, where he announced that another legislative proposal was related to police funding. Cities must prioritize public safety. The term defund the police doesn't mean the same thing to everyone calling for police reforms, and not all supporters of police budget cuts want law enforcement agencies to lose all of their money or be disbanded. Defunding efforts among Texas city officials largely aim to redirect some money away from the police department and instead put it toward things like housing assistance, mental health services that can combat the root causes of many crimes. Advocates for the movement say shifting funds aims to remedy racism, segregation, poverty, and often fueling tense relations between law enforcement and residents of color in the first place. So far, Austin and Dallas are the only major cities that have either cut some police funds or indicate they intend to do so. But the phrase defund the police, touted by activists, has become an alarm bell for Republicans. The defunding the police frame is not a surprising frame for Republicans to embrace, given that the whole phrase was probably an unfortunate political wording one day that has evolved into something that's more than a meme. More than a meme than a policy in any recognizable way, said Jim Henson with the Texas Political Project at the University of Texas Austin. They have many campuses, obviously. For many Democrats, the political response has been to label the highly publicized outrage on police funding from Abbott and the Republicans as a distraction from what they call a failed response to ongoing coronavirus pandemic and its deadly and economically devastating impacts on the state. After Abbott asked candidates to pledge against cutting police budgets Wednesday, the Texas Democratic Party issued its own pledge Thursday that instead of focusing on party priorities like health care and pandemic response and education, since the virus hit the state earlier this year, the state has seen over 645,000 positive cases, and more than 13,600 people have died, though experts suggest the death toll is likely an undercount. Sometimes I hear it's an overcount, too, by the way. And the state, like the rest of the country, has suddenly high jobless rates, and the economy has entered into a recession. So that's basically what the deal is there. I got 2 minutes left. Because this the article goes on for a little bit more, but I think I got the gist of it. I just drew the lines. That's how that works. Austin City Council vote. As it plays out in Texas, much of the political fight on police reform and refunding and funding has centered on the state's capital of Austin, which is home to both the conservative governor and the progressive city council. Paired with the national unrest after George Floyd's death, the Austin police shooting of an unarmed black and Hispanic man, Mike Ramos, in April, and the instances of police seriously injuring people of color during protests heightened calls to fire the police chief and shift resources away from the police department. Last month, while the local city council voted to cut police funding following the protest, it prompted Abbott to suggest dramatic and likely hard-to-pass legislative measures to penalize cities that slash police budgets or let the state take over their own departments. I think I'm gonna kill it here. I think what Abbott had done is he wanted to freeze the property tax rates in cities that had voted to defund police. And that's a major thing because most of the municipalities get their money from property tax, people's property tax. So if you freeze something and you don't allow it to increase, that's going to limit the amount of money that any particular municipality is going to be able to collect. And that hurts them across the board, not just in the idea of police defunding. So, but I'm still burping. Let me tell you, it was a great meal. I mean, it was a spectacular meal, but it's killing me. It's 100% killing me. Anyway, thanks for listening imbibing in any fashion you have. I'm gonna get going.
Yay!
Alrighty then. Let me do the plugs and then I'm out of here. Let's pop this up. Yeah, okay. That's it. So head over to I gotta read. I gotta see it in front of me. Head over to lfmidwood.com and you'll find my archives and you'll find my social media. You'll find my favorite links. And if you go up top, you'll see a link to 11LRNI, which is John Lightning's site. And there'll be John Lightning archives and Dave the Boogeyman archives, Big Steve Cole archives, and my archives as well. Head all the way over to the right. That's the far right of the screen as you're facing it. Our good friend Brad Reed over at Grits Radio. I believe he's running him. I don't know what his schedule is. I should check one of these days. But I don't know what his actual schedule is. But I know he streams pretty much full time. And we're one of the programs that are lucky enough to be streamed on the stream. So, again, our thanks to Brad. Let me get out of here. And I'll be back next week. I think I'm just going to close and get out of here. Let me see if I can do this. Find it. There it is. Well, bye, y'all.
Music, news, and views.
Hey, that's not right. That's not right. I got to do it right. Hang on.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.
I hate when that happens.